We talk about the most popular conspiracy theories, or should we say the real news that will come out 6 months from now.
You've heard of ChatGPT, but have you heard of AI-generated video? It's fun and terrifying.
The Writers Guild is going on strike. Now who will come up with Stephen Colbert's next hilarious vaccine dance?
Following Jesus is simple. Local pastor Brian Holland is here to break it down in just 14 complicated steps.
All this and more on
The Babylon Bee Podcast.
Welcome to the Babylon Bee Podcast, everyone. I'm Kyle Mann, the editor-in-chief of the Babylon Bee, and I'm hanging out with Adam Yenser and Jaron LeMaster. They probably have titles, too, but I don't remember what they are.
Yeah,
that's right. I'm not sure what they are.
So you guys talked to Brian Holland about his new book, Simple?
We did.
I did not.
Oh, well, it says Adam.
I spoke.
It's Jaron and Adam.
Did I talk to him?
It says Jaron and Adam.
I think maybe.
Was I there?
We did, yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember.
It was a really memorable interview.
Shoot.
Maybe it was just Jaron. It was just you, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. Oh. It was me.
Well, we'll find out.
And Emma. Was he the pastor who was here?
No.
He was the bald pastor.
The big bald pastor.
I might have talked to him. I don't remember what his book was.
Dude, this was a long time ago. It really was.
It was a great
But the Venn diagram of people that we get on the podcast and people I know is... Those circles don't touch at all.
I know Brian. I know Brian very well.
Okay.
He's
I guess I did talk to him, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I did now that I think about it.
This is awesome. I just love this. Well, I got to travel to the frozen tundra of Montana this weekend.
Oh, beautiful.
Cool. There was Montana's a last minute. I loved it. There was a last minute speech I had to give. Somebody dropped out. Graham Allen from Turning Point USA.
Oh, okay.
They had adopted a kid and they got the call. They had to go pick up the kid. Oh. So it was like last minute. We
kid
need a
story. Your kid's in.
Yeah. Your kid's here.
We'll hold him till Tuesday. Then we send him back to the distributor.
Right. He's done.
Your order is ready for pickup. I had to go get him. So I got to fly out there, and it was like whirlwind. It was one of those trips where you're there for less time than you're traveling, mm-hmm. So I landed in Missoula, drove 2 hours to Helena.
Oh, nice.
Then gave the speech, fell asleep for 4 hours, jumped on a plane in Helena back to LAX, which I spent more time driving to LAX and trying to get mm-hmm. parked and all that than I did in the air.
Wow. Montana's great. I went out there for a fly fishing expedition a few years ago. And it was
Did you catch any flies?
No. We were fishing for flies.
I had that misconception into my teenage years.
Huh. It was the Squaw River, and it hadn't been accessible to the white man.
You were the first. You claimed it?
No, literally. For like 100 years.
Okay.
And so it was on the reservation. They just opened it up to Americans to come on. And so... the trout there are the smallest one I caught was like 22 inches. It was massive. And we were on these jet boats. Like it was like the best experience ever. I highly recommend it if you guys are fishermen.
Well, I just,
so you like fly fish from the jet boat. I always picture fly fishers with the waders like standing in the water.
Yeah, you do. Well, you can do that too. But really there's like a little like brace, like or something you'd stand on at the head of the boat. At the very top of the boat. I don't know what you call that in a boat. Mm-hmm.
The prow.
And anyway, so you
where
just
the naked
stand
mermaid
it.
Is.
They stand.
The carving.
Yeah, you become the naked woman. and then you stand there and you just go, like, it's amazing. They go to this, all over this massive river, and I'm telling you.
I have a funny story about a naked mermaid on a prow.
Do you really?
Yeah. We were at a restaurant called the Brigantine in San Diego, and it has one of those on the ceiling, like a big ship suspended and a naked mermaid hanging off the prow. Mm-hmm. And there was these salespeople that were trying to impress us to start selling us their valves or pipes or whatever. And this guy was just being the classic crass salesman.
Uh-huh.
And he's just loudly shouting in the restaurant, like, how much you want to bet I could climb up there and stick a $20 bill in her boobs? and it's like me and Dan and like some like Christian guys, and we're just like,
okay.
They didn't get the account, but
so funny.
That's not the flex you think it is.
Yeah, no.
Did he do it? Did he try to?
He didn't
it?
Do it. Yeah.
Oh, I would have tried to get him drunk.
Yeah, do it. You really should do that.
Yeah.
Hot on the heels of the second largest bank failure in U.S. history and the eighth interest rate hike within a 12-month period, 186 more banks are at risk of collapsing. Your bank could be next unless the Fed does what they just did back in March and prints $300 billion out of thin air, making your dollar worthless. Not to mention the recession risk that could have a significant impact on your investment and retirement accounts. Take our advice and protect your financial future with something real, like gold and silver, from my friends at Allegiance Gold. Allegiance Gold can help you protect your IRA or 401k with physical gold and silver, and if you prefer, you can have it delivered securely right to your front door. Since the beginning of time, there is only one universal currency that is always of value, and that's gold. Allegiance Gold has the highest ratings in the industry, 5 stars with TrustLink, a AAA rating with the Business Consumer Alliance, and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You can invest with confidence because of the quality and service of Allegiance Gold. Get up to $5,000 in free silver on a qualifying purchase when you visit protectwithbe.com today. That's protectwithbe.com. Or give them a call at 844-790-9191.
Anyway, Montana was beautiful and the people were cool. And they're dealing with their stuff right now with this Zoe Zephyr.
The man who thinks he's a woman.
That's right.
Congressperson.
I guess what they were really upset about, and I hadn't seen this in the headlines, but the thing that he said that it got him censored on the floor of the state assembly or whatever is that he said, when you Republicans pray and fold your hands, like there, you, I hope you look down and see blood, you know? And they were like, that's inappropriate. Get out of here. So they just made the headline like, well, when he said that there was blood on their hands, they threw him out. That's not inappropriate. But it was, he was like connecting it to their religion. So they were very offended by that, obviously.
Yeah. That's inappropriate.
And he seems like a real piece of work if you watch some of the rants and stuff that he's doing.
Sam, I haven't watched much of him. I saw a picture.
Well, doesn't he think he's a woman?
Yeah.
Right.
So that's, you know.
Well, yes, but that's
the line you cross.
Agreed. But they always, the left always seems to have to hitch their wagon to anything. Like any crazy person, no matter what, like Dylan Mulvaney, it's like
the crazier the better. Yeah. Like, the crazier the better.
They're forced to celebrate it because they've made that the litmus test or whatever. Yeah.
That's true.
Well, everyone, if you like these talks about Montana and fly fishing, you can hit like, subscribe, and hit the little bell to keep up with all our podcasts on YouTube and Rumble, and find our Babylon Bee podcast page on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we want you to become a paying subscriber to the Babylon Bee to get the ad-free full-length podcast. There's also bloopers and outtakes, and Jarrett breaks on every other take in the on the shoots, and nobody can act opposite Travis without breaking.
It's impossible
to do. So if you want to check out some of that behind the scenes stuff, become a subscriber. Go to babylonbee.com/plans and use the new code podcast to get 20% off, and that tells people that people are listening to the podcast. So
let's do it.
You could also use the link and the code podcast, and we'll have a link there on the screen, to get 10% off anything in the Babylon Bee store, including the shirt, the very shirt that Jarrett is wearing that says a Caucasian Jack.
100% less offensive language. Mm-hmm. You can still support your snacks.
We will send you this exact one if you order a small.
No, this is not a small.
Oh, okay, what is that?
This is a medium.
Medium, okay.
But I find myself in between medium and large. I don't know if you
That's where I am.
I'm in between small and medium, yeah.
Okay.
I would rather wear kind of something a little tighter than something really loose, so I don't know.
I have the problem because it's my gut
is
still not down.
Mine too.
So the mediums show the gut, but they show the arms more. This is a large, but they show the arms nicer.
Yeah.
But the large kind of hides this part of the physique.
Yeah.
But it also hides the gut.
So yeah, the large sometimes makes you look fatter.
It's a catch 220 pounds.
Then even if you can see your gut, like the large actually, I don't know. It's just, it's weird.
It's true.
Makes you feel boxier.
Say, yeah, it's the boxy look or the tight look. But if the tight look, I feel like I have to go the whole time.
I'm doing that right now.
Are you? That's what I thought. Maybe. Well, guys, we're going to keep the good vibes going with love mail.
Muchas gracias, mi amor. Love mail.
Someone named Seth Hale left a comment on a recent Michael Malice interview, which if you missed, you need to check out. Michael Malice is awesome, and he talks about the fall of the Soviet Union and taking the white pill.
There's a white pill now?
There's a lot of pills.
There's a red pill and a black pill.
I think the white pill is like hope. It's based, but optimistic.
Oh, so you're not just pessimistic about
it. Because I think that's black
that's
pill.
Cool. Black pill is...
What's the blue pill?
The blue pill is like go back to sleep. And
blue pill is when you're just, you're not awake. You're
Matrix.
Not awake. Yeah,
you go back into the Matrix.
You're falling for all the,
You go in back into that farm where they make the babies. And they use them as the energy source for all
Do they make babies or do they just...
They put the babies in the pods and you're attached up.
And they just grow up in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Right, never, so I guess they do put
You never get out of the pot.
Mm-hmm. Right, got it.
You're in amniotic fluid.
Well, let's see what Seth said. So he said, I'm not very far into the interview, but I'm incredibly interested in this book more than a lot of Michael's others. It seems he's pointing to something similar to Tolkien's idea of eucatastrophe, which is to say the nature of the gospel. Probably inadvertent, but it is the pattern of the gospel. A sudden turn from bad to good. Everything looks dark and bleak and cold and depraved, but here is hope and goodness and glory. It's the story that God loves to tell more than any other, it seems. You can see it everywhere. Well, that's interesting.
It's really great.
Yeah, I haven't watched the Michael Malice interview yet, but I think I'm convinced to check it out.
I'm going
to
take the white pill.
Take the white pill, everybody. You can get it for 10% off by using code podcast in our store.
Turkester.
The pill, not the book.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
What's in the news this week?
Steven Crowder blasted his wife during a divorce proceedings on his show. His wife's family released a video where apparently Steven Crowder is smoking a cigar while verbally abusing his very, very pregnant wife. Have you guys seen this clip?
I did.
I didn't watch it.
I watched it.
I watched some of it. I watched kind of like the part that they just clipped out, that short exchange.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there was like a wider context. My favorite part of this, though, is that when Dan originally wrote the notes, he wrote David Crowder instead of Steven Crowder, who is a Christian recording artist. And I was confused for a while.
Yeah, he's the worship guy.
So just to be clear, David Crowder, as far as we know, hasn't been smoking a cigar and abusing his pregnant wife.
No, not David Crowder, Steven Crowder. Let's get our facts straight. He in there, he said stuff like, you need to perform your wifely duties and not leave the house with their one car, because I guess they have one car. He's a millionaire. I don't understand why they only have one car. But he wouldn't let her leave the house, and then she
is
would.
Is it an expensive? Is it a Maybach or something?
It may be like, maybe.
he put it all in that one car.
McLaren. Yeah, so, but he ends up kind of telling her not to leave, and then he tells her to put gloves on when she's feeding the dog and that she won't obey him. So a lot of this is like he's angry at her because she won't obey him. And so it's a weird thing as we watch it. But anyway, we kind of think that the car thing is a control tactic, you know? You get this, you get one car, even though you have enough money to buy anything else. Told her he didn't love her in that video. Talks a lot about discipline and respect. He kind of goes off on some strange, like, do you respect men? How do you respect men? He kind of has this weird thing.
I stopped watching Steven Crowder videos after the first one. I was like, I don't need to see
worthy,
any more of that.
Right.
This
be
one was less wife. Funny than his other ones.
I doubt that.
But. Yeah. No, well, it's about the same.
I don't want to see that. Well, the reason I didn't watch it because I don't want to bash on his personal, like him and his wife, whatever. That's their.
No, I thought
he's having a very public. He's having a very public deterioration meltdown over this stuff.
Yeah,
and I think you know, obviously, we need to pray for him. We need to pray for his wife. Whenever the personal stuff comes out like this, it's like I don't want to sit here and relish in it in a gossipy way.
No, but
obviously,
this is...
if he's representing Christ and he's you know, this stuff is going out there and his personal life isn't matching his public life, then that's terrible. And hopefully there's people that have reached out to her and offered her the support that she needs. And I mean, we've all been in fights and said things we don't mean. I mean, obviously not to this extent.
I know. But. It's weird though, because I think philosophically, I think dealing with it is okay for us because this is a representation of what the left or people that progressives would assume that conservatives do to their wives. Like, I think they all kind of think that we're a bunch of patriarchal, like weirdos.
Secret abusers.
Like, yeah. So it's like, oh, see, like, this is proof that you guys are a bunch of jerks.
It definitely doesn't make conservatives look good.
No, anymore. Well, and I think talking about what a real Christian marriage is.
He's a proclaimed Christian, right? Like
What I hear. Like, that's one of the reasons why I'm having a hard time, because some of it is like this weird.
I've never followed
like,
him.
I just never liked that he was not funny in a fake comedian. But I don't want to get involved in his personal life.
That's the real crisis.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I take issue
with. I just don't. Marriage is a partnership. It is. It's not like what he's describing, this strange, weird abuse.
Yeah, but again, we don't know all the details. I'm not trying to excuse what happened on this video.
No.
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I just pray for him. Hopefully, there's some healing that happens in that, because that is ugly and brutal. And that can make you go crazy.
Well, in his life, I think success makes people go crazy too. There's this part of his life. He got crazy successful.
Just accept that we're trying to pray for him, Jarrett.
Do we know who got the car in the divorce? They had just the one.
The wise judge said, I'm going to cut it down the middle.
Yes, whoever loves the car more.
No.
The
Crowder goes, fine.
No,
fine.
You keep it. You keep it.
This segment is brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, the best donut shop anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm an East Coaster, so I love
Dunkin'. I do. I like Dunkin' Donuts. It tastes kind of industrial to me, but I like it.
Mm.
It's better than Starbucks.
It is.
For the coffee.
I agree with that. See, I'm not a coffee drinker. I like the donuts at Dunkin' Donuts, though.
Well, they don't have donuts at Starbucks, so they're by definition
better. They have one. I think they have one glazed option at Starbucks. Yeah.
Maybe they do.
Or like the old school, the old fashioned.
Yeah, they do more like weird breakfast pastries, like a muffin.
Some are good. Ham and Swiss croissant's good.
Mm-hmm. I like
banana bread is good. I just got into their coffee. Their cinnamon coffee cake is good at Starbucks.
Oh, yeah.
But for donuts, Dunkin's. What I grew up with.
I'm a Starbucks egg bites man.
I am too.
The Dunkin' Munchkins, they're so good.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
Maybe we should look into that.
Little donut holes.
Mm-hmm.
And Dunkin' just introduced egg bites as well.
Did they?
To compete
with
Starbucks.
How are their egg bites?
They're good.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They're
I like
on
a Starbucks egg bite.
On par with Starbucks egg bites. Hmm. I had one at the Ontario airport recently.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah. Nice. Wasn't bad.
I like the Dunkin'. They have a breakfast sandwich, a pepper bacon egg sandwich. It's really
that bacon,
good.
And they do those little bacon snacks. Have you gotten those? Where there's like eight pieces of the peppery sweet bacon.
Good, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we do that.
10% off in the Babylon Bee store with code podcast.
Is that true?
Mm-mm.
That's not true. That is not true.
Somebody's going to go into Dunkin' Donuts. like the Babylon Bee discount.
You know, we did a joke very early on in the Bee's life about family Christian stores, like code heresy for blah, blah, blah. And we were getting emails from family Christian was emailing us saying, where did you guys come up with this code? And old ladies were going into the store trying to use it.
That's sweet.
That's wonderful.
Funny. That's great.
Well, there are two pro-Biden influencers that have been on TikTok and Twitter. And Community Notes, which is a new fact-checking service at Twitter, went and fact-checked all of it and found that they were being paid by the DNC. So they then kind of had a public meltdown about it. And if you watch these videos, all you need to do is see the still and you know that it's going to be like, absolutely miserable.
Yeah, look at their faces.
So these two guys rant all day about Joe Biden is right for our nation and Republicans are trying to destroy America.
It's horrible.
It's...
But it looks horrible, but it also looks like 99% of other videos I see on TikTok and Twitter. It just seems like that's what...
It's that, yeah, yeah.
Every thumbnail looks like that, and I know that I'll hate it before I click on it.
So their names are Harry Sisson and Chris Mowry. Have you guys seen these community notes on Twitter?
No, what is community notes?
No.
It's a crowdsourced fact check.
Okay.
So instead of the like Facebook approved, like this is false climate info or whatever... People vote on it, and you have to have a consensus from people on the left and the right for it to.
Oh, interesting. Go and up. Does that work, or is it still very?
It seems
flawed?
To work. I think I've seen a couple flaws where they're fact checking things that probably didn't need a fact check.
Mm.
And one interesting thing is these fact checks are popping up on ads. So people who are paying for ads on Twitter companies are now getting fact checked. Like,
like this isn't the best.
This is actually isn't the best.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, that's probably isn't good for Twitter's business.
Yeah. I mean, we're so used to being lied to in marketing.
To have
so
a fact,
yeah, that's very interesting.
It was interesting. Like, this is actually a stock model.
Actually, the Yelp reviews are
world
terrible.
Famous clam chowder.
Yeah,
false. No one outside of Missouri has heard of this clam chowder.
Nobody in Japan has ever heard of this.
But it's actually really interesting because, like, President Biden is getting fact checked on Twitter, and it's wonderful.
It is beautiful when you see him getting fact checked.
So this fact check said that Sisson recently signed with Palette Man. Management, which received more than $200,000 to fund their content in the last 8 months.
Wow.
And FEC records show that Harry Sisson received $200,000 from Palette. Palette took that money from the DNC. And that's pretty interesting. So here's another fact check of Karine Jean-Pierre, who said, when it comes to illegal migration, you have seen it come down by more than 90%.
Almost everyone jumped on her for that.
And there was
a wildly false,
where did
obviously
they get that?
Incorrect.
Where
claim.
Did they get that number?
And a nice thing about the community notes is they have to have specific facts, like specific claims. It can't just be this isn't true. You know, visit our fact checking center. It's like, here's the number of migrants between 2016 and 2020, and here's the number between 21 and 2022. And then it's linked to actual sources, even from the government.
And I'm assuming, is this community notes, this new fact-checking system, is this our buddy Elon's doing?
This is, I think Elon either launched this, or he took something that was called like bird notes that had previously existed, but wasn't very expanded on. He just expanded on it.
And perfected.
He made it just, perfect, as he does all things.
Yes. About this one particular claim that Jean-Pierre said, where did,
I don't.
Did they redefine the term or something? Like, how did they come up with that number? Because a lot of times this is what they do. They'll take something, they'll redefine it, and then they'll tell you.
Or they'll use
new
an
definition.
Outdated statistic or something that can be interpreted two different ways. But this just sounds wildly false.
It's just
it
insane.
Just sounds
like
completely 90%. Incorrect. Yeah.
So sometimes
obviously wrong.
Remember when they did the gas thing, gas prices have come down, and they just zoomed in on like one little cent that
like
had come
been
down?
90% since 8 a.m. this morning or something, exactly. You know, and it's like, well, there's, you know, there's,
during
only,
the rainstorm.
There's only two migrants now, and there was 50 this morning, yeah. So it's come down 90%.
That's right. Yeah. That's like that claim when they say we're the fastest growing religion, and it's one guy, and he invites his friend, and now it's the fastest growing religion in the world.
That's
true. So this is interesting.
I was always skeptical of that at I don't know if I should say this or not. I don't think it matters because it's public. When I was at Ellen, they would always give away TCL Roku TVs, and they would always say America's fastest growing brand. And they would say that for years. And I was like, because nobody buys them. I'm sure they're not bigger than like Sony or something.
It's we sold just, two last year.
Yes,
we sold
and now it's so, right. So just statistically, it's the fastest growing.
Yeah, that's right. So maybe it's true, but it's really in a very narrow context.
It's a quality TV.
This has been right. Adam Yenser's community note. Well, speaking of things that need community notes.
What the heck is President Biden talking about here? This is his tweet this week. It says, Muslim culture has been woven throughout American culture from the very start. Mm. We must always stand against anti-Muslim hate and stand up for the rights and dignity of all people. It's essential to who we are, a nation founded on the idea of freedom and justice for all.
Yeah, so people are kind of zooming in on that first sentence, Muslim culture has been woven throughout American culture from the, like from 1776?
From the start of yesterday.
I used to hear, the only thing I've heard of that is, didn't Thomas Jefferson carry both a Bible and a Quran with him?
Did he? I didn't know that.
He was like a very well-read man, and I think he had read and understood the Quran, but I, you know.
That's also, that's again, saying the same, to say it's been woven throughout American culture because Thomas Jefferson carried a Quran around.
Well, that's the only reference that I've heard to it in early American, early American culture. But
is this specifically responding to some Muslim?
That's what I was going to ask.
That was the weird thing.
Did something happen this week?
I didn't know what actually happened.
Anti-Muslim sentiment out there.
May 1st, I guess.
And the other thing is, you know, like the second paragraph. Like, yeah, we should stand against anti-Muslim hate. But would he ever tweet something like this out about the way Christian culture was woven into America from the start?
It's like you agree with
it's going out of the way to pander to a certain demographic. Yeah, that's why I wasn't sure. Did something happen?
It's like I agree with the second part of it, but I don't know why he's tweeting it. It's like one of those, sir, this is a Wendy's tape.
Yes. Sir, this is a Judeo-Christian culture.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of the Bible?
This is a Chick-fil-A.
Thomas Jefferson waged a war against the Barbary pirates.
I guess that was Muslim culture, maybe.
Yeah.
But I saw a stat, maybe it was one of the community notes on this, that the first mosque in America was founded in 1929.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe earlier than I would have thought.
Were there Muslim settlers in the very early days of America, even if they were like a slim, super slim minority?
I don't know the answer to that history.
Yeah.
There were millions of people coming over, so I imagine there were a few people that were of a Muslim background.
Yeah.
But as far as creating a culture, even an area where the Muslims were kind of together, I don't think that was
a big influence in the early American culture. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're just explosive growth.
But then again, back then, Islam, I mean, gosh, not to get too much in the weeds, but Islam was different in terms of its public persona back then. It was a lot more peaceful. Mm. There wasn't as much kind of what we would know of as extremism now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like you watch like Lawrence of Arabia, you know, there's all this hospitality over there. It's like,
but let's get something that, you know, Christians, Jews, and Muslims hate, Pornhub.
Yes.
We can all agree. We can all agree and come together. Not a good cultural force.
No.
Pornhub blocked the entire state of Utah because they passed an age verification law that requires you to upload a picture of your identification that proves your identity and age.
Wow.
So good for Utah.
Is that
bad
for Mormons? Are they trying to punish Utah? I feel like that's.
Like, forget you.
I honestly cannot believe that more laws like this haven't, because I am not, just in the sense of free speech and artistic expression, I think you can debate whether porn has artistic value or not. But I'm not for banning porn, but I am astonished that there are not more regulations in place to keep people from under 18 from viewing it. It's so accessible to kids these days.
Such an easy first
step.
They
get exposed to it at such an early age.
Yeah.
There needs to be more laws that make it so that kids and people under 18 can't access this stuff so easily.
Well, I feel like they should ban porn, and I feel like it should be something that, you know, it almost like the way abortion used to be, where you have to go like out of your way to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
In some, even you if you want
to go back to the good old days, when you had to get it from the CD guy behind the 7-Eleven.
The CD guy behind the 7-Eleven, right.
You had to go through the saloon doors at the video rental place.
That's right. The beads. And then
You had to drive your car and park out front somewhere. Yeah, where it was embarrassing. And instead of making it so ubiquitous to the culture, it's in everything. It's part of the entire internet. So, like, I don't know. I wish we could.
I don't think porn is a good influence on anyone. And in that sense, you know, I understand why we should ban it. But I think in the sense of artistic expression, it's hard to draw the line. Like, how do you know whether you're blocking hardcore pornography or just stopping a San Diego restaurant from having a naked boob mermaid on the ship? You know?
Yeah.
That beautiful art.
What is
art,
the line?
That beautiful art. That
know
art.
It when you see it.
Yes. That's like we talked about art exactly. last week. Yeah, too. I think you have a broader understanding of art than I do, but I think the.
I just watched a Simpsons episode with the kids, and I let my kids watch the Simpsons, even though I'm a Christian. And they're at a Blockbuster. I had to explain to my kids, like, they're, you know, the renting tapes.
Oh yeah.
And Bart goes to the adult section and he goes through the beads, and he's like, "All right," and he goes in, and it's all like Watergate's documentaries.
Like a boring adult stuff.
like adult stuff. Oh, man.
There is a video store in my hometown when I was growing up. It wasn't the Blockbuster. It was like the local, I think it was called Marquee Video. And they had the like saloon door beads and stuff to the adult section. And when I was in probably seventh or eighth grade, one of the kids saw our social studies teacher coming out of And so the next day at school, it was all, "Mr. So-and-so came out of the adult section at the Marquee Video."
How embarrassing for that guy. Oh my goodness. Awesome. That's awful.
My gosh. I said that's awesome. And porn you said, sucks. That's awful.
Yeah, that's right. Porn's terrible. It should be banned. I hate it.
Hey, I have two questions for you. How are you paying for your healthcare? How's that working out for you? If it's working perfectly, great. Go grab a snack. If not, then listen closely, because I have a solution for you. A biblical solution. Samaritan Ministries. Samaritan Ministries is a community of Christians paying one another's medical bills. It's biblical, affordable healthcare sharing with no network restrictions. Here's how it works. When a medical need arises, you choose the healthcare provider that's right for you and have a say in the treatment you receive, even if it's a natural approach or an alternative medical treatment. Your medical bills are shared with fellow members and your need is covered in prayer. Healthcare sharing with Samaritan Ministries may also be more affordable than what you're paying now. And if it's the right fit, you can join anytime, even today. Check it out at SamaritanMinistries.org/TheBabylonBee. That's SamaritanMinistries.org/TheBabylonBee.
Well, okay. Paul Stanley from KISS called normalizing transgender surgeries for minors a sad and dangerous fad.
Oh, good for him.
Good for Paul Stanley. I knew I made the right decision when I went and saw KISS at the Pond in 2019.
Yeah, the Knights in Satan's Service. I'm glad you went.
I saw that guy and his gut was hanging out of his leather jacket.
Oh, really?
And they were coming down on the chains like when the show started or whatever. And I was like, I bet that guy's against transgender surgeries for minors.
Because just look at him.
Yeah. They're horning in on his territory. He's like, we used to be the only ones who could look weird. So he said there's a big difference between teaching acceptance and normalizing and even encouraging participation in a lifestyle that confuses young children into questioning their sexual identification as though some sort of game, and then parents in some cases allow it. I don't know if that's a real sentence. There are individuals who as adults may decide reassignment is their needed choice, but turning this into a game or parents normalizing it as some sort of natural alternative or believing that because a little boy likes to play dress up in his sister's clothes or a girl in her brother's, we should lead them steps further down a path that's far from the innocence of what they are doing. With many children who have no real sense of sexuality or sexual experiences caught up in the fun of using pronouns and saying what they identify as, some adults mistakenly confuse teaching acceptance with normalizing and encouraging a situation that has been a struggle for those who truly affected and have turned into a sad and dangerous fad. So
we built this city.
That's not KISS.
You should make this all into lyrics.
That's Chicago or something. I don't know.
That's Billy. No, not Billy Joel. That's Billy's, no. It's Starship. Jefferson Starship.
Isn't that Starship? Wait, what's KISS's? I say I don't know KISS.
Rock and Roll
KISS's
All Night.
Rock and Roll All Night. That's what I was thinking of.
Well,
yeah.
Rock and Roll.
I knew they had Rock and Roll in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And potty every day.
No, I made a mistake. I was thinking that was a KISS song, but I was
got
wrong.
Got it.
Because I knew they had. I'm not a big KISS fan.
Got it.
I'm not either.
Yeah.
Jefferson Starship.
Never did like KISS, actually.
Because I was trying. Where I was trying to remember it from, there's like a Family Guy where Lois goes to the KISS concert. Oh, okay. Yeah,
they have the Destroyer album and Alive 1 and 2. Good records.
Knights
but they were
Service.
They were kind of weirdos. Mm. I don't think that's what it stands for.
You don't think so?
No, that's one of those urban legends like D&D's.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Stands for Keep It Simple, Stupid.
Mm.
I'm sure that's what it is. Okay, last week we showcased AI's ability to scrape the internet and mash things together to generate images. Now it seems to be able to create videos. Enjoy this video of Will Smith eating spaghetti our friends at Not The Bee have reported on. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. I would love to hear this video of Will Smith.
But first, I'm going to join the Not The Bee's newsletter to escape the censors and toxic social media platform.
Yeah, and become a subscriber. It already looks weird. It looks like Chunk.
All right.
Oh, gosh. What is this? But see, this doesn't look that good. This looks very strange.
That smacking sound.
Oh my gosh, this is terrifying.
It's not good. But
it's not good.
But it's one of those things like when your kid draws a giraffe and you're like, oh, good job, man. That kind of does look like
it. It looks kind of phallic.
It's like it kind of does look like this.
What is Not The Bee doing? Why do they report on this stuff?
Well, they're our friends.
They really got to scrape the bottom of the barrel sometimes. don't they?
That
you
was very
stuff. You won't believe that. And I watch it. I'm like, nah, I believe that. It's just the kind of stuff you always post.
I pitch that headline? There was some headline I pitched about it, like shocking video and Not To Be something you've seen 7 years ago. And not that shocking.
Exactly. It's always that kind of thing.
We love you guys.
But
it's not that shocking.
That AI was not very impressive. It was just kind of goofy looking.
That was really weird looking.
But Joe Russo,
I'm sure they turned it into a 5-paragraph article.
With lots of emojis and fire emojis.
Yeah.
Did they mention that he looks kind of like Chunk from The Goonies?
Mm.
Not Chunk, the other guy.
Sloth.
Joe Russo, the director of Avengers Endgame, thinks that with the speed the technology is moving, we're 2 years out from full-length motion pictures being generated with voice commands on our couch.
Oh, I hope not.
Say, make me a movie about...
That is what's scary, yeah. Because, you know, I think there's probably... Most people are against doing that sort of thing, but as long as you can make money off of it and it works, there's going to be studios and people out there who just take the shortcut and
do
that.
I'd like to see an Indiana Jones movie that's about, you know, finding some kind of thing, and you could probably just watch the whole thing. You'd be the only person that would ever see it.
So here's another one. This is apparently an AI-generated pizza commercial.
Oh, see, I thought that was Sloth in this one. At first, it looked exactly like him.
That seems like someone wrote that. I'm willing to bet that somebody either curated that a little, massaged it, or added the jokes about Pizza Magic and stuff.
I don't know. I can believe AI.
It has a good comedic. No, it has a good comedic timing. Like, you know that guy that used to post those fake scripts, and he's like, I made a bot watch thousands of hours of Batman, but he was actually writing.
He was making up the fake.
It was like
stuff,
a very clear. That's how that comes off to me.
Yeah, but I've seen. I mean, if you ask AI,
it feels like a Tim and Eric sketch.
Yeah,
it feels just weird.
Pizza Magic. Yeah.
If you wish, I feel like I've seen AI produce like jokes on par with those jokes that we just watched.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me.
That's the thing. It really didn't.
I mean,
feel
the Will Smith eating spaghetti. I believe that a computer came up.
Yeah.
The other one, I don't think so.
Maybe you're right.
Maybe they generated elements of it, but I think someone stitched it together to make it funny.
Yeah.
All right. Shocking video. Are you shocked? Let us know in the comments.
Super shocked.
So Elon Musk commented on The Onion this week. So The Onion posted a story, Goofy beats Ron DeSantis to death with a crowbar. And it has a bloody crowbar that Goofy is holding. And this guy tweeted about it. And he said, the same people who are outraged at the Babylon Bee for telling the truth about Rachel Levine will have no problem with this tweet from The Onion. And Elon said, The Onion has become jarringly unfunny. At the heart of humor is a revealed truth, but woke is a lie, so it is humorless.
That's our guy.
That's our man. He's our cheerleader. Yep. Look at that.
Yeah. Our number one fan.
That's good.
I don't think The Onion joke is particularly funny, but I also don't think it's as bad as people were trying to make
it. I didn't kind of care about it. It was one of those things where I put it on par with the Will Smith bald joke and with our Rachel Levine joke and this joke. It's if they didn't cause an outrage, they kind of would have just gone away.
Yeah, they just gone away.
I thought you were going to say
is
on
this,
on par with Will Smith eating spaghetti.
Oh, it is kind of on par with Will Smith.
But is this in reference to some either Goofy or Ron DeSantis?
Well, Ron DeSantis
just
has
the feud with
the feud and the lawsuits going back and forth with him.
Of course. There it is. But still unfunny. Mm-hmm. Even knowing the back
it was. The Onion leans into this absurdist humor sometimes where it's just like something random that happens as a part of it, and it's not, they're not trying to make a big point with it. Uh-huh. And I think people mistake it for them trying
they
to make
a big
point.
They still every now and then have good headlines, they still have some funny stuff.
A pretty clear point on this one.
I don't think there's a point. No, what is the point? Because there's no political point there other than commenting on the situation that both sides hate each other.
They're trying to say that Ron DeSantis should be beaten to death with
I don't think that's what they're trying to say.
You don't think so?
They might think that, but I don't think that's what
you don't think they're trying to say it here.
Yeah.
All right. It's like this is a fantasy fan fiction.
I mean, maybe it reveals something. I don't know. I think it was just trying to be absurdist and shocking.
I'm just trying to think if the Bell and Bees ever like done anything like this, where it's just a statement.
Sure.
You know,
like I don't when
know
we gave Rachel Levine this? Our Man of the Year award. Well, yeah,
but that was.
But we didn't have him.
I do like when people point out that we told the truth about Rachel Levine. Yeah. I do like that phrasing.
Yeah. Yeah.
A revealed
Rachel
truth.
Levine is
because Goofy never did this. I don't, as far as I know.
I don't think so, but.
Yeah. Maybe they're just reporting the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows?
Vice, once valued at $5.7 billion, is filing for bankruptcy.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. Here's a tweet from Zach Stentz. How in the world did the market ever think Vice Media was worth more than what Disney paid for Marvel Studios?
That number does shock me.
Insane.
That's almost what they paid for Star Wars.
Mm. See, this you should put, you won't believe this shocking article.
We should pass this off to our friends.
Exactly.
Charlie Kirk, who's got a beautiful face, says that Vice...
I live my life as a capitalist every single day, Shank.
I don't think I've ever seen that clip.
I haven't seen that clip either.
Good.
I gotta watch it there.
It's so good.
I do agree with you on the face, though.
A beautiful face?
Well, it's a beautiful face. The features are really small.
Charlie Kirk?
Small features.
So I like those when they shrink.
It's kind of a large head. I think it's called kirkslider.com. And it's that quote. It's I live my life as a capitalist every single day, Shank. And you can shrink and enlarge Charlie Kirk's face. And his voice gets higher and deeper. It's hours of fun.
Patrick, can you pull that up? No,
we'll see if we can get it.
Okay, maybe we'll put it.
We'll put it at the end.
Yeah. Well, he says this comes just days after BuzzFeed News closed its doors, and weeks after NPR announced it was laying off 10% of its workforce, and ESPN, ABC News Corp, and Vox Media have all announced staffing cuts this year as well. So bad sign for the economy. Bad sign for journalism sector in particular.
Mm-hmm. Here's one that doesn't affect us. The writers are
speak here for yourself.
The writers
I might have to go picket some of this.
Oh yeah, okay. The writers are really going on strike.
I might have to.
You might have to. Is that part?
Is that really true?
I don't know how much you can comment on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to comment on a lot, but yeah, I'm in the WGA, so I may have to go walk the picket line.
You should take this one.
No, I shouldn't.
I should not. I'll take this one.
Yes.
The writers are going on strike. So Writers Guild of America, Board of Directors, the WGA West, and the Council of WGA East, acting upon the authority granted to them by their membership, have voted unanimously to call a strike, effective at 2:01 a.m. Tuesday, May
2nd. Or 12:01.
12:01. So really quick, what is this? I mean, obviously, strikes are always about... Oh, and this is the greatest part. It shut down all the late night comedy.
Jimmy, I think Fallon, it was instantly Colbert. The next day all those shows didn't air because they don't have those are those ones that they're written the same day, they're produced the same day, so they can't.
Really so they can't produce anything. But you know who's still going is Gutfeld. Gutfeld's still going.
So it's just part of the issue.
Everything he does is extemporaneous. You're allowed to have shows if they're just speaking. Like right now, I can do this because I'm just making stuff as I go. But you can't have stuff that's written.
You're telling me Gutfeld does not write his monologue?
Oh, his monologue, yeah. But I don't think it's a guild show. I don't think he has a guild show.
There we go. Must not be because he's still on.
It's AI generated.
It's generated by Cole.
So I don't know how everyone wants to comment on this, how accurate this is, but it says part of the issue seems to be the economic strain put on writers with the transition to the streaming model. Writers are paid per episode, and what used to be a 22-episode television season is now a 10-episode streaming season, so a lot less work. This will have wide-ranging economic impact on the entertainment industry, such as caterers, production crews, local restaurants in L.A., Georgia, New York, all the other filming spots.
And I know, Adam, you probably could comment more intelligently, but you're not going to. I think this is a necessary correction, though.
Yes.
Because for a long time, the streaming platforms have really sort of gutted the industry in terms of like who gets what, and the back end is terrible, and we got to figure this out.
The writers want their fair share of the pay for, as this switches to streaming services. Now, this has been the issue for the last versions of this have been the issue that's come up the last few times they've ever gone on strike or have been close to going on strike, because you know the industry is transitioning from network and cable media to online and streaming stuff. And yeah, the current business model and the contracts aren't really built to to pay people fairly in that model.
Yeah, as far as I understand it, people generally get paid in production and then nothing on the back end. It used to be that you made all your money on the back end. And so I don't know. I think it needs to be adjusted so that there's more of that, because people are still making money on your product for a long time. So I think it's important. It's important. Got to get that piece of the pie.
So
no strike at the Babylon Bee, though.
But luckily, you know, it's not just writers. Luckily, the economy is bad for everybody right now. But hold on, somebody's...
Patrick just wrote, what is your favorite pie?
Patrick?
Our production assistant. What is your favorite pie?
What is my favorite pie?
That's a good question.
Is that what we're really going to talk about?
I like a pumpkin pie. I don't know why this...
Depends on
a question just popped
because
up.
Because I think someone said... Because he said, get the piece of the pie.
Oh, okay. Oh. I thought this was just apropos to nothing. I'll go with pumpkin pie.
I think I like a good... something really sweet, like a apple pie that's got a lot of...
Pie is good.
Like a Dutch apple pie or
with
something.
With ice cream, with vanilla ice cream with it.
It's kind of like a donut crust. You ever had that where it's glazed?
I don't think
it's
so.
It's an amazing thing.
Okay.
So it depends on the year for me. Or the time of year. So honestly,
I like a 2004. Yeah, 2004.
aged perfect.
A minced meat pie. No, I think I do like around Thanksgiving. I like pumpkin, and then the rest of the year, I'll probably have apple if I have pie. So I like
meat pie. There's a pretty good consensus here.
And meat
usually
pie.
We argue over things. We're all apple pie and pumpkin pies.
Those are the only two pies.
Now, what does start a debate is if you ask cake or pie, which is better.
Pie.
That's
pie.
Controversial.
I'm a pie guy.
Oh, see, I'm a pie. I'm generally a pie person.
Oh, so
I've heard people get into debates about that, though.
I don't like cake. I don't understand the birthday cake.
See, the only cakes that I like are ice cream cake and cheesecake, which are more similar to pies, I would say, in their consistency.
And it's just because I like cheese and ice cream.
Yeah.
I would love an ice cream cake with the crust that's all crushed
and
up.
And those little Oreo crumblies.
I love that. I love an ice cream cake.
Is this the economic collapse that won't be televised? How are bank failures worse now than in 2008?
I thought that was the Burj Khalifa, but it's an economic graph.
So this shows, graph is completely unlabeled, so we have to figure out what it means. I think it's banks that are that have failed like in 2008.
I can't make out any of those
Washington
circles.
Mutual
These are all names of banks. So there's a bunch of banks that failed in 2010-ish.
Uh-huh. There we go. I can see it now.
And then this...
This is the most meaningless chart I've ever seen in my life.
And then there's some balls.
This is the worst infographic I've ever seen.
And then there's more balls over here.
Uh-huh. And some of them have numbers, but some of them have words.
So there's
neither axis is labeled.
So there's three banks that... Three very large banks, Signature, Silicon Valley, and First Republic Bank.
Those all failed.
Failed now. And the stack, the tower is almost as big as this tower.
Oh, so that tower was the last financial crisis.
Yeah, and this is the current
2008.
One.
I see. Okay.
But it's not as many little banks.
It's two-thirds of the crisis with three entities.
With only three. So I think the point is that if this tower fell over, more balls...
There's as much money being
lost. There's a lot of balls.
As all those tiny banks that failed.
Well, this is what happened in the news this week, everyone. But we wanted to leave you with one question. What would Ron Paul do? Let's go on to the banger of the week.
Good.
Americans are discovering that if we want to change the nation, we have to change the way the marketplace works. And that change starts with you, with your local communities, and with your wallet. Be deliberate with your dollars and reject woke corporations. Imagine a world in which every single dollar you spend would go towards companies that share your values for life, liberty, and patriotism. Now with the Public Square app, you can. Public SQ, or Public Square, is an app and website that connects freedom-loving Americans to the community and companies that share their values. Engage in a nationwide platform with the largest directory of patriotic businesses and consumers, all while accessing exclusive savings at businesses that see the world the way you do. The marketplace is free to join for consumers and business owners alike. To get started and shop your values, download the Public Square app from the App Store or Google Play, or click on the link in the video description.
Banger of the week.
What about Rand Paul?
The best stories are the ones that we're trying to figure out what we're looking at as we discuss it.
What in the world?
Here's our banger of the week. Unemployed guy's basement selfie video crushes Fox News and primetime ratings.
We didn't talk about Tucker. But we talked about Tucker last week, didn't we?
We mentioned Tucker last week because it had just happened hours before we did the podcast.
Yeah,
that's right. And he got 24 million views on that little 2-minute address that he did. Mm-hmm. Which is a lot of
views. In a few days, too. Yeah. It was like really quick.
I know the show was getting, 3 or 4 million viewers? Mm-hmm. But of course, getting 2 minutes on a tweet isn't the same thing as getting people to watch a solid hour of...
And now Fox News has been leaking stuff. Someone there has been leaking stuff, trying to smear Tucker or expose the...
They're trying to make
There's a video where he called someone's girlfriend yummy.
That's
on,
right.
On, like, in between takes. And then there's some text message, probably the most incriminating one. It was a group of MAGA people beating up an Antifa person. And he said part of him hoped that they would kill the guy. And then he also said that's not how white men fight.
No,
this is not how white men.
Isn't he kind of? I feel like Fox News is trying to make Tucker Carlson unhireable.
Yeah,
yeah, he's kind of because there are options that he could go to, like Newsmax. Mm-hmm. You know, we had Chris Reddy on our show probably 3 or 4 months ago, and he was talking about Newsmax. But Chris Reddy,
prepared to offer Tucker Carlson $17 an hour.
He could probably get higher than minimum for sure.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, we'd love to have him. We just don't have a lot of money to give him.
Yeah.
We pay $15 a headline, so if he's got any ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of interesting, in that thing you're talking about with the Antifa, he released this text that I guess he had written to his producer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I was watching this video of these people fight, a group of Trump guys surrounded an Antifa kid. And then he said, I suddenly found myself rooting for the mob against the man, hoping they'd hit him harder, kill him. I really wanted them to hurt the kid. I could taste it. Then somewhere deep in my brain, an alarm went off. This isn't good for me. I'm becoming something I don't want to be. The Antifa creep is a human being. Much as I despise what he says and does.
So see, yeah. I just looked at this morning right before we started shooting. They cut off, obviously, the context that he said, no, that's not how I feel.
I shouldn't gloat over his suffering. I should be bothered by it. I should remember that somewhere somebody probably loves this kid and would be crushed if he was killed. If I don't care about those things, if I reduce people to their politics, how am I any better than he is?
So he's saying the exact opposite of what
it's like when they said Trump called white nationalists fine people because they cut off the part where he said white nationalists should be condemned totally.
Don't get me wrong, not the white nationalists. They should
they
be
just
condemned.
Have to edit it there so they can make it sound as bad as possible.
Well, we also have a bomb.
Hold on, hold on. He didn't explain why he thinks white men don't fight that way. That part's still a little weird.
Wow.
I didn't understand what that meant.
I don't really either.
This is not how white men fight.
In Maybe groups. It was a typo.
Bomb of the week.
Job's three friends offer to cheer him up with a song on the recorder.
I like that one.
This is a good one.
The recorder's annoying.
Yeah.
Little kids play it all the time.
Right. I think Joel said his kids started taking up the recorder, and now his wife was posting pictures in their minivan of them all in the back seat.
Playing My Country, Tis of Thee, and Hot Cross Buns.
And the Jurassic Park theme song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you guys complain that we don't do church humor anymore, why don't you click on the Bible jokes?
Because it bombs now.
It bombs. Explosively bombs.
Bomb of the week.
It's the Babylon Bee's sketch of the week.
Is the FBI listening to your phone calls? Mm. We got footage of a couple FBI agents in a van listening in on some extreme.
It's shocking, and you won't believe it.
You will not believe it.
So the van was fun. I wasn't at the shoot. Was it fun?
Sitting with Siak in the van for, what, an hour or two?
It was, okay, the last two shoots we've had have
This is not what white men usually do.
It's like 100 it's like 100 degrees in both cases in the last two shoots. We've had the one yesterday for the Disney one, and then that van shoot was just terribly hot. We had a good time, though. And, it was so fun to just kind of play and have a good time with Siak. It was great. And Adam did a great job directing. Mm-hmm. I know he hates doing it, but he does a great job.
Oh, no, I left for that one. Brandon directed
it. Oh, Brandon. Never mind.
He didn't do great.
Yeah. He didn't do great. Yeah, you were there for a minute, but you did write this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Prior to the strike. Didn't write it.
Didn't do
anything illegal.
That's right. Okay.
And we had a bunch
just got posted this week.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of voice actors who
that's right.
Phoned in some performances.
Yeah, Kurgle was on this one. We had Austin Robertson on it. He played the,
Played a few parts.
That's
Mugsy. The magic of his voice.
Yeah, let's see. We had Adam played a couple parts. You played a couple parts. We had a lot of folks. So it was an amazing sketch, actually. I think this is one of my favorite sketches we've ever done. I thought it was a lot of fun. It really worked well. It flowed really well.
I usually can't enjoy our sketches that much because I was involved in them. Mm-hmm. And this one, you wrote the script. I kind of had read it, but mm-hmm. I wasn't on the shoot. And so I just got to see the final product and I loved it. I was very much enjoying it. It's such a great little gag machine.
I'm pretty sure. I don't think there's any gay or trans jokes in this one.
No.
Oh, no, really?
No.
I think we made it through without...
Can we still make an edit, or is it too late?
We'll maybe add an addendum with an identifies as joke.
If you become subscribers, you really want to see the outtakes on this one. I think
you guys had a lot of fun riffing.
Very fun. Yeah, I think
you and Siaka, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You and guys had a lot of fun, and then came to me editing it, and I said, nope, back only to the script.
On the page. I am a writer. Yeah. You will do what I say.
The Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon where the robot's hammering in the no fun allowed sign. No fun allowed. That's how I feel when I edit everybody's stuff. They're like, we had so much fun on the shoot riffing.
Yeah.
It's got to go.
It always reminds me of the old Simpsons where Homer is it the football team or the baseball team? He's the coach. And he goes, now it comes for the easiest part of any coach's job, making the cuts. Now, I couldn't cut everybody I wanted to.
I think it has to be really, really good to make the cut if it's an improv. Like, I don't think it has to be really good.
Yeah.
So I don't mind the cutting because I think usually the script is good the way it is. But
yeah,
sometimes that riffing just kind of like gives you the energy you need for the rest of the sketch.
No, it's fun to do it. I think a lot of times it doesn't make the cut. But when you watch shows like The Office, a lot of times people think those are very improv, but they're not. They're very scripted.
Shows like
scripted.
Office and Curb and stuff, there's a little improv involved, but they're a lot more scripted.
Modern Family was entirely scripted. Mm-hmm. Like if you could not go up.
I can tell that one.
And even in your audition, I auditioned for it once, and you have to memorize word for word. You could not leave out an at.
Did you audition for the gay couple?
No.
Oh.
I auditioned to play a golf instructor. I don't know. It was a long time
ago. Well, riffing is always, it's often funny, like riffing and improv, you know, in the outtakes and stuff like that. What's hard is it's very funny, but often it ruins the pacing or delays the setup to another joke later on.
The next line is supposed to feed off the previous
one.
Yeah, the jokes have to continue. So, it has to be a crescendo.
So don't do that anymore, Jarrett. Thanks.
Yeah.
If you want to see something that's entirely scripted and not riffed at all, check out Weekly News with Adam Yenser. Here it is.
It's time for the Weekly News with Adam Yenser.
The Writers Guild of America has gone on strike. That's it for Weekly News. To see more, subscribe to my YouTube channel and come see me live. I'll be at Copa Comedy Club in Ventura, California, May 5th and 6th, and at the Comedy Chateau in North Hollywood, May 12th.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, in a given week, I probably spend most of my time working and trying to make sure that I have all my ducks in a row for that. Then I spend the rest of my time on my family, focusing on my wife and kids. You need to be able to take care of yourself as well. I've had to learn how to balance those things. And in my own personal experience, going to people and talking about it has really helped. So if you are thinking about going into therapy, go to BetterHelp if you can. It's a great opportunity to learn the coping skills, how to set boundaries, and empower you to kind of be the best person that you're supposed to be. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. If you're talking to somebody that is licensed, that knows what they're doing, it's extremely helpful. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BabylonB today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BabylonB.
Hey, thanks for that, Adam Yenser.
Awesome.
And now it's time for getting to know Dan Dillon. Who is he? Has he been posting some interesting polls on Twitter? What do you guys think in response to these questions about controversial conspiracy theories?
So here we have Dan Dillon, who apparently is related to Seth Dillon, we know. Mm. And he's posting these things about conspiracy theories. I think these are interesting. Which one of these controversial topics do you honestly consider more likely to be true? So let's, I guess we can answer these.
Sure.
Okay.
Epstein killed himself. 7-day biblical creation.
which one's more likely to be true?
Okay.
Which one's more likely to be true?
I mean, 7-day biblical creation. But I do think.
I'm with the crowd on that one.
Wait. So Epstein. Okay. All right.
He did kill him.
So here's another one. Bush orchestrated 9/11. versus moon landing was staged? Which one would be more likely to be true?
I don't believe either of those, but Bush orchestrating 9/11, I think, is more likely than the
I agree.
Moon landing being
really? Because I don't think he... I don't think he was that much of a mastermind. I think he.
I think they're both far fetched.
Yeah, but I think
if Bush orchestrated 9/11, it was deep state like puppeteers, and not like Bush was like, well, I think what we should do is
not to go too deep into it. I think it's more likely that they had information that it was going to happen and did not do all they could to prevent it.
Yeah. So I guess I'll say Bush orchestrated 9/11 too.
It's which you kiss it. This is like a would you rather where you have to.
Yeah, they're tough. They're
that
fun.
Was weird. That's interesting.
All right. 2020 election was rigged. January 6th was staged.
Which is more likely to be true.
I have to wrap my head around this.
Yeah, so
election was
again,
rigged.
I don't believe either of those, but I think it would be more likely that the 2020 election was rigged than that January 6th was staged.
Now,
in its entirety. Now, I don't think there was people instigating there, but to say the whole event was staged.
Yeah,
no.
My answer might change if you would say January 6th had some.
Yeah.
You know, federal operatives that were there.
Mm-hmm. That were egging it on.
Yeah. Egging it on, maybe. Yeah.
I was staged is greasing the wheels. There.
But completely staged, I don't think anybody thinks it was completely staged.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Well, apparently 43% of the people who voted in this poll did.
There are QAnon people back when it was happening that thought it was just completely, like, fake.
But, like, those people that were thrown in jail and, like...
But what part of January 6th? That's, like, such a broad statement.
The entire calendar
the
day.
The date.
Yeah, because, like,
January 6th isn't real.
Like, January 5th.
Not the riot. The date on the calendar.
What does that mean?
It's actually January 5th, part two.
All right, here's JFK murdered by the U.S. government or the COVID or COVID release was planned.
See, this is tough because I think both of those are very likely.
Yeah.
This one, the others, I think they're all unlikely.
Well,
this one, I think both of those are very likely.
I don't think the COVID release was planned. Like, I don't think it was, let's release this into the wild. I think it got out, and then they used it.
I think that's what's happened, but I think there's a chance.
There's a chance it was planned.
There's a strong chance.
My vote would be for JFK on this one.
Here's a theory. I'm sure this is out there already. I think a possibility with COVID is that it leaked from the Wuhan lab, and then China realized it was going to decimate their population, so they allowed it deliberately to infect the rest of the world so that everyone would be impacted by this virus and not just China.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they were okay with it.
But no, I would say 50-50. I think both of those are
they have too many people there, and that's why I think they were trying to deal with it.
All right, we got a couple more.
All right. We
live in a simulation. Elvis is still alive.
No, Elvis is still alive.
Oh, see, I think simulation is more likely than Elvis is still alive.
I don't believe
either of them, but I think living in a simulation is more likely than Elvis is still alive.
Elvis would be what? He died in 1970... 1970
oh, so
something.
You're considering that even if he didn't die when he said he did, by now he'd be dead.
Maybe.
That's a valid argument.
He'd be in his 90s.
Yeah.
He'd be really old by now.
So, yeah.
So he may have died this year.
So I think we live in a simulation is like zero, but I also think Elvis being still alive is like zero. So, I mean, I guess I would say simulation, but it's not.
That's a weird thing.
Yeah, I don't believe any of them, but I think simulation more likely than Elvis.
I would say Elvis is still alive is more likely.
All right, final one, the Big Bang and Jesus' resurrection. Well,
I think they might both be true.
Jesus' resurrection
is far more likely to be absolutely true.
Correct answer.
Mm. There's more evidence for it.
All right, now we're going to talk to local pastor Brian Holland.
Who I talked to and loved speaking with. Very memorable. One of our most memorable guests.
Oh, gosh.
We're about to find out if Adam was on the interview. Here we go. He has a book called Simple. Go check it out.
It is great.
And now it's time for another interview on the Babylon Bee podcast.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the interview show. We're so excited to have my good friend, Brian Holland, here. Brian's a pastor in Claremont. He's also written a book called Simple. It's a great book. We're going to highly recommend it. And if you live in this area, you should go to his church. It's a great church. What's the name of your church?
Ignite City Church.
Ignite City Church. Brian, it's really nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And with me is Adam, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go way back.
Yeah.
Brian and
how
I
did you guys meet?
Do you know how we met? I can't remember.
I think the first time I met you, we went to lunch because you were applying for that worship pastor position.
Did we go to La Paloma?
No, it was down. It was the one down the street.
We went
El Mandero.
El Mandero.
It's fantastic. The biggest burritos you've ever seen in your life.
I had a bean and cheese burrito because that's what I always get there.
No meat?
No.
Oh, that's horrible.
No, it was good though. And I remember we sat down, we talked. We talked about the Lord. We talked about worship.
Yeah.
Talked about a lot of things. What's going on with you, man? Why'd you write this book?
Uh, You know, I wrote the book. Actually, it's been on my computer for the last probably 3 or 4 years, just sitting there. But I feel like I should probably finally obey God and publish it.
Mm. I was down.
That's right. Just do what he says. I was down in Mexico probably 7 years ago or so. I was speaking. AP used to do a Mexico outreach thing down there, and there was a married couple who were leading worship, and I preached the message that this book is based on. And the wife came up and said, "Hey, I really think you should write about that. I think the Lord wants you to write about that." And I said, "I'm not a writer. I mean, that's just never anything that I've been good at. I don't think that I've got a good handle on grammar." And so I was like, "I'm not going to do that."
You're not a smart person.
I don't feel like I'm not the sharpest tack in the box. Absolutely not. But after a while, as I kept praying about it, I thought, "Okay, I'll try it." And I did it, and then it just kind of sat there. Sent it to a couple publishers. Nobody was interested. But man, you can self-publish now for nothing. And so, I don't know, about 2-3 weeks ago, I was sick at home, and I thought, I've got time. And so I just put it together. But I became really passionate about what the message of it is. I think maybe we've complicated following Christ. We've complicated what the church is supposed to look like. I feel like when I read the book of Acts, and if all the churches met in homes for the first 200 or 300 years without a building, I can't imagine a group of 20 people showing up and half of them are on an elder board and half of them on our deacon board and everyone's fighting about power and structure. It just seemed like it was an organism rather than an organization. And I feel like maybe we've lost the heart behind it.
Yeah.
And so then to just take John chapter 2 and just look at key points within that passage that makes us go, okay, so what is this? What does this following Jesus look like? And I really do. It's not easy. I mean, I don't think simple and easy are synonymous.
Yeah.
But I think simple, it's just do what he says. I mean, this is what he wants us to do. Mm-hmm. And so then just do what he says. And even if it goes against what we're wanting to do or naturally inclined to do, we just say, God, I want to honor you. I want to love you. Mm-hmm. And so there's a part in that book and in that passage when Mary looks at Jesus and just says, just do whatever, not looks at Jesus, but looks at the servants. And just, and then says, just do whatever he says. Just do whatever he says.
Right.
That's the simplicity of it.
You're talking about like this scene where he turns water into wine.
Yeah.
You know, and Mary's like, just do what he says.
Just do what he says.
Just do what he says.
Yeah.
Or like with the colt. I was just reading that story where the colt, where he's like, go up and,
all right,
you know, do this. Like, okay.
Like go take somebody's colt without really talking.
Without
just
asking.
Untie it.
Yeah.
It's like walking up to somebody's Tesla and not asking if I can borrow it.
The Lord needs it. Yeah.
I'm going to try that the next time when I want to drive the car.
The Tesla owner's like, okay.
Right.
Great.
But they let you do it.
Yeah.
So it's actually the sense of trust in him. And do we actually trust him to just do what he says?
Now, you've been a pastor for a lot of years.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your journey. Like, how did you start? Who are you? Where did you come from? And how did you become a pastor?
Yeah, so I was born and raised here in Southern California. Never wanted to be a pastor. I mean, I grew up going to church. I was part of a Christian school all my life. But I remember it's in high school that Jesus becomes a subject and the Bible becomes a textbook. And you got to make sure you get the grades so you can get into the college, so you can get the job and hopefully find the wife, and then you can have that perfect little life. But I wouldn't say it was until about when I was about 16 or 17 where Jesus became real. Mm-hmm. I was actually, my dad's a retired cop, my brother is a cop, and I thought that's the direction I was going to go. I have the size for it, so I figured, well, this is what
I'm doing. You're also a black belt.
I haven't really told a whole lot of people that, but now a whole lot of people.
Now everybody knows.
Now everyone will know, but thank you. Yeah.
Don't mess with Brian. He could probably kick you. He'd probably kick you right in the face.
And everyone he's related to is a cop.
That's right.
So there's
some connections, yeah. I guess. Yeah. So I thought I was going to do that. And I remember saying things like I'll never, like speaking in front of people was something I never wanted to do. But I have this little line now that never is God's playground. Like if you want to see God just kind of laugh, just say what you'll never do. Mm. And he's probably going to move you in that direction, which is, it doesn't work always because I'm like.
I would never be a billionaire.
That's what I try to go that direction. And I feel like he says, absolutely not. You're not going to do that.
I would never.
So, but growing up, like I said, I just wanted to be a cop. And then I remember when I was 19, my youth pastor said, hey, I want you to work with middle schoolers. And I thought, no, I tried it once and they were, it just felt like they were like minions of the Antichrist. Like I didn't know what to do with them.
What do you hate about middle schoolers?
Then, not now, then, they were just so squirrely. I mean, plus I was a 19-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And so when they're just so squirrely and weird. And then, but
that's
again,
how I feel about 19-year-old kids.
That's right.
It seems like it's gotten worse over time, not better.
I was just hanging out with some last night. They're the worst.
Well, you're gonna have a strong ministry with them.
I'm just kidding.
So he changed my heart. I mean, the first time I tried it, I absolutely adored him. I loved it. I mean, I'm showing up to their middle school basketball, and at halftime it's like 6-2, and you're just thinking this is the most boring thing I've ever been a part of. But I wanted to be there, and I wanted to pour into these students, and so God changed my heart. And then I had people speaking into my life, "Hey, you're gonna be a preacher one day." It's like, not at all. There's no way that's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. And he's done it. And so almost 30 years in, I did student ministry for 17 and young adult for 5, and then was the campus pastor for Purpose Church for 5, and now we just launched our church, Ignite City, a year ago, January.
When does someone stop being a young adult and they're just old? They're just like a regular old adult.
Oh, I don't even know. I feel like I'm there.
Yeah.
Is that what you're at?
I'm definitely old now.
We've passed it.
Yeah. Young adult. I'm not young adult anymore, but I'm always curious.
Do you feel it? Or is it just because
every now and then I just turned 40 a couple months ago. And throughout my 30s, I went to young adult groups and social events at church through my 20s into my early 30s.
Okay.
And then in my mid-30s, I would still get invited to young adult things, and I started to question. I don't know if I'm really that thing anymore.
Did they keep inviting you because they needed to make sure there was enough people there that it felt like it was good?
I don't know. I like to think they just liked me.
Okay, good.
But
maybe they did.
No, then at some point, you're just a regular old adult.
You're just an adult.
Yeah.
I agree. I think there was a phase. I was always in the ministry when I was through that period.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine like not being in the ministry and being invited as a 36-year-old to hang out with these like 23-year-olds. Like, I just feel
like, a little weird. You
know, yeah.
It's weird. Yeah, what we ended up doing like 18 to 35, which is like a crazy span of young adults, mm-hmm. like when we were in ministry together.
Yeah.
And so 18 to 35.
I think 35 is the cutoff. 35.
Yeah. I think it might be sooner than that, some of the 35-year-olds are still.
35 is where I felt old.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
I hear you.
Back to Jesus.
I don't have an answer.
Less about me. Yeah, let's talk about Jesus.
So So that's where I'm at now.
That's where you're at now. So Ignite City Church, did you know that this is kind of if you have read the Postmodern Pilgrim's Progress by Kyle Mann and Joel Berry, which they just released it last year, the name of the church in that book is Ignite Church or Ignite City Church.
I did not know.
Did you know that?
No.
He did not base it on you.
That's kind of a bummer. We've made it.
Funny. Yes. No, it's so funny. Anyway, read it. It's not your church. Okay. But they did. They did use that name. No, that's great. I remember when you were coming up with that name, we used to do a worship event called Ignite, and we'd have all these different people, and there was this worship leader named Brian Hall that would come, and he'd just be awesome, and just such a great worship leader, very anointed guy, and it was awesome to get to do that. We'd have these things, and so over the years, that name just kind of stuck with you.
Yeah.
And then when it was time for you guys to kind of be your own entity, you ended up using that.
Well, that's weird. Actually, the team, I wasn't even going to go that direction. I was going to call it, I wanted to go Mission City Church.
That's good.
Like, hey, we're on mission in our city.
Yeah.
But the team was kind of leaning that direction. I thought, well, I don't want to bring Ignite back from that.
Yeah.
And I was going to fight a little bit, but it was really a young little, how old was she? Probably 6 at the time. There's a set of twins who are part of our community. And she motions me over after a worship service and gives me this little picture. And it says, names for our church. Like, she's thinking through it. I told the people to kind of give me ideas. And the first thing it said was Jesus's church. And I went, I guess it doesn't matter what it's called. So I just went back to the team. I said, guys, what are you wanting? And they said Ignite City Church. I said, perfect.
All right.
Because it's just Jesus's church. Yeah. So I got it from a little seven-year-old that I felt like God used her to release me to just say, it doesn't matter. But then I said, now that we are Ignite City Church, I'm super passionate about it. Because the goal is to move everyone away from, hey, we do everything centralized in a place. Think about it. It's like church has become a place you go to or it's an event you're part of. But the church is a gathering of people brought together to fulfill a purpose. That's what ecclesia means. It's a gathering of people. And so it should be, hey, if your mission field starts in your zip code, which is something I push constantly with our people, and everyone's called and anointed. Like, if you're a follower of Jesus, you are a missionary. It's not just I need a passport so I can go somewhere, but you are a missionary in your community. Mm-hmm. Then hit your community, and your neighborhood is your mission field. Mm-hmm. And then wherever you live, whoever your neighbors are, just think about it. How often you leave your house, you drive past all your neighbors to go worship, and you come back and you haven't talked to your neighbors at all. Then we'll prepare ourselves for a short-term mission somewhere around the world.
Yeah.
And all the while, we'll miss out on the mission we're called to.
Yeah, there was a quote that I remember somebody, I think it was a guy named Norman Grubb, would say that if you're not effective here where you are, you're not going to be effective if you get on a plane.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have said that, but I think that's, I love that.
Yeah.
If you got to be effective in the place that you're living. You know,
absolutely.
So otherwise, you're not going to be effective overseas.
Yeah.
Although I do think short-term mission trips are good for training your heart to sort of learn how to do it. But yeah.
But maybe if we'd see them as like a break from our mission rather than that's my mission. Because then we just
more like vacation.
Like a vacation from our mission.
I do think some of these short-term mission trips are vacations. Let's just be honest. Let's be honest, you know. That is so crazy. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm noticing while you're talking, I'm noticing that you're kind of, your approach to your relationship with God includes a lot of people like speaking into you.
Yeah.
And at different times, you kind of like, are like, oh, that's a word from the Lord. That's a word from the Lord. Can you speak? I know you're a very orthodox, like, I don't know what theological background you're from, but like, I do know that you take a lot of, you put a lot of value on the Holy Spirit speaking through people to you.
Yeah.
What would you call that? How do you describe that? And how can people learn how to do that?
Yeah. I think
how do you know that
it's weird? I feel like I'm still in process. I mean, all of us are trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know. I mean, you think about the early church; they didn't have the Bible to read. Most of them were illiterate. They were illiterate, and so the apostles would be preaching the things that Jesus taught or things from the Old Testament. But you would see them pray all the time. That was what they were known for. And now we're known for preaching and Bible studies. Mm-hmm. And prayer is kind of like what you start with and what you end with, right? So it's, God, would you speak to us through your word, which I believe. I mean, the foundation is the word. Mm-hmm. But I can't understand and I can't decipher God's will if I'm not in his word. And so I'm not one of those guys that's like, I don't need to read the Bible. I'm just going to go with whatever I feel.
Yeah.
The thoughts have to then be kind of, they have to be deciphered and
well, you're almost a teach the Bible verse by verse kind of guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Aren't you that kind of guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're like the opposite of the guy that's like, we don't need the scripture.
Absolutely.
I got this.
Yeah, verse by verse, I just feel like, hey, they wrote it for a reason. And all the topics that we're wanting to preach, we're trying to find them in there. So we'll get to those. Yeah. But yeah, just verse by verse. But I do believe, just the way that the Holy Spirit spoke to people in the book of Acts, I want you to move. I want you to go to speak to the Ethiopian. And he goes right then. There's no hesitation.
The Ethiope.
That's right. See, we're going to go speak to him.
Yeah.
But now today it's like, well, I don't, I mean, that makes me nervous. Or what if it's not him? But, and we'd kind of justify it. So I feel like if ever this thought comes in my mind, hey, you should go bring up Jesus with them. Mm-hmm. I doubt it's Satan. I doubt it's the devil going, hey, you should go tell him about Jesus. But a lot of times we go, oh, no, I'm not going to do that because, one, I'm not comfortable with it. As if we think that God's whole existence is to make sure that we're comfortable. Mm. It's not about that. It's about making sure that people hear about Jesus, even if we're uncomfortable about it. But I feel like I've had people come up and say, I feel like the Lord wants me to tell you. And sometimes I'll listen, and sometimes I'm like, I don't see it.
Yeah.
But I'll get other people's opinions of people who love Jesus more than they love me. And I trust their discernment. I know that they're people who love Jesus and they're in the Word. But not just this random, especially sometimes when people say, I have a word from the Lord, and it's something that's very, it's kind of for everyone. It's kind of like, the Lord wants me to tell you that he loves you. Oh, wow, that's pretty much that's the constant. Mm-hmm. So, but when it's specific, and I can trust their character, so you brought up Ryan Hall, I trust his character. Like if all of a sudden when we were working together, so I feel like the Lord's wanting, and I trust your character. Because you're a person of the word, you're seeking counsel, I'm seeking counsel, we're in prayer. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, hey, every thought that fits with my feeling must be the Lord. I just, that's arrogance, that's ego. Mm-hmm. I think we pastors can get a little bit egotistical. Yeah. We can sit in our think tanks and we have this thought, and therefore it must be God because we're in the room with each other. Mm-hmm. And I just don't believe that's true. I think everyone, like when you think of the church, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And some of the best ideas, if not the best ideas, come from outside the think tank. Like, let people speak into it and be part of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that gives the answer to the person, except be in the Word, be in prayer, and find people that are mm-hmm. wise and have gone through life and love the Lord. Let them speak into those things.
Yeah.
And then if you sense the Lord's still saying, go for it, you have to obey.
Yeah, there was my grandfather was a pastor, and he used to say that the Lord speaks in about five ways. So he'll speak, like, I know we can speak in probably more than that, but he would say the categories are scripture, obviously the revealed word of God, wise counsel, and then what was the other one you just said? The three that you just said. You said scripture, wise counsel, and I forget.
I said prayer.
Through prayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's moments of prayer. So we'd like the still small voice in your spirit. Yeah. And then there's random occurrences kind of stuff.
Right.
And then like audibly, I guess. Maybe there's six. Like sometimes he'll speak audibly. And then sometimes he actually just kind of, yeah, maybe it's just like a sign or something right. like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, movies, seven.
Hey,
yeah,
definitely. Braveheart. We're starting to add. We're starting to add to the numbers.
Yeah, Braveheart. Yeah, so it's interesting though, because I think the challenge for us as Christians is to hear the voice of God and learn how to discern what He's saying and then obey it.
Right.
So is that kind of the basis for simple? It's kind of that. Hear His voice, obey it.
I think the basis for simple is. Be faithful in the mundane. Just be faithful in the mundane so you can have the front row seat to the miraculous. Because mm-hmm. when you get to it, she tells a bunch of servants, just do whatever he says. The problem is no more wine, which is a huge shame. It's a huge shame on the family because they couldn't provide.
It is a shame.
And in many ways, yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
It's a big shame.
But when he says, hey, go fill these up with water. Well, the only way to get water into these massive jars that holds 180 gallons is with a bucket. And it's the same monotonous thing. You take the bucket and you fill the jar and you just take that. And nobody's paying attention. Nobody even knows it's happening. And yet the end of the passage says, and Jesus manifested his glory and his disciples believed in him. And it's all because some unnamed servants did something that nobody else noticed. And it brought about the first miraculous sign that Jesus showed everyone. Mm-hmm. And everyone probably didn't even know about it. But enough that he manifests his glory because you filled some jars. Mm-hmm. And then his disciples believed in him because some dudes filled some jars. And if we could get that into our minds, it doesn't have to be, we're going to put together this massive event that draws in millions. Because I feel like maybe that's just not working anymore. Mm-hmm. Like we think if we can get the biggest amount of people at this specific thing. And I just heard of a pastor at a camp just said these words. I think his name is Chris Hilken. He said, we don't serve a God who works efficiently. We think that everything's going to work so efficiently. He really takes his time. He's not in a hurry. And so in my mind, instead of always trying to have these events and say, this is the thing everyone should come to, what if every follower of Jesus simply, quote unquote, filled some jars, or every follower of Jesus brought Jesus up in a conversation one time every week? How many people would hear about Jesus? But then everyone's involved in the process of making disciples rather than, hey, the pastors, they're the pros, and then we pastors need to ask for forgiveness and stop saying, hey, you need to invite them here so they can hear someone teach about the scriptures or teach the gospel. And what we should be doing is equipping God's people to share the gospel. Mm-hmm. And inviting someone to an event or inviting them to a worship gathering should be supplemental mm-hmm. to what every follower of Jesus is doing. It's really kind of, it's unfair and it's selfish of us as leaders to not give people and equip them with the ability to go and share Jesus, but only to expect them to bring them back. I mean, if you think, just bring them to this thing, bring them to this thing. But now I feel like we have a culture and generations that don't know how to bring people to Jesus. Mm. We just know how to bring them to something, but not someone.
Someone.
And so
person.
That's what it should be about. Like, yeah. All of us should be able to brag about Jesus. We should all be saying, hey, this is what it's like. I'm a sinner before I come to Christ, and I have nothing to offer him. Mm-hmm. But then he woos me. He calls me right. because he wants me. And then to be able to explain everything that Jesus went through, and then resurrect so that we can be reconciled and redeemed. It's mind-blowing.
I really like I like what you're saying. I feel like Luther has this thing where I don't know what it was in, but he said God smiles when a man changes a diaper. So it's like it's this
yes.
It's this we have a false dichotomy, a false distinction between the secular and the sacred.
Right.
And the professional Christians and the lay people.
Right.
The clergy and the lay people. So we have this false dichotomy, false distinction. And really what the clergy is there to do is to equip the saints for the work of the gospel, right? Like right. It says in Ephesians.
Yeah.
So equip the saints, and then that's kind of what your philosophy is. Give the people the opportunity to go be the missionaries that they need to be.
Right.
Each person is a missionary. There are no attendees at your church. There's right. only missionaries, right?
We're all missionaries.
Yeah. Is that kind of the way you see it?
That's exactly how I see it.
Yeah, yeah. There's no attendees.
I think Spurgeon is the one who said every Christian is a missionary or an imposter. And so we can't just sit there and go, well, there you have the missionaries who go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. When all followers of Jesus are called to go. So I might just go across the street, or I might just drive down to Claremont, which is where our church gathers to worship.
Right.
But then everyone goes back, and the goal is to get everyone to get, hey, you have a part here. Who's the one person that God wants you to impact? Read the Gospels. You'll see Jesus do things with the multitudes a few times. But the focus of the gospel, he'll leave the multitudes to go deal with the one. He'll pull aside the one. Like, think of the deaf and mute guy. There's a ton of people around him, and some friends bring the deaf and mute guy, and he takes him to the side by himself. Mm-hmm. And then he does this weird thing, like he puts his fingers into his ears, and then he spits and touches his tongue, which is kind of weird. That's the worst church greeting ever.
That's how I try to convert people.
Okay, good. Is that how you greet one another when you get to work?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But what's he doing? How else do you tell a deaf guy, hey, I'm going to open your ears? And if they had a belief that there was healing in spit in that day, and he spits and touches his tongue, he's like, I'm going to heal your tongue. But he does it by himself. It's just Jesus and this one guy. Or Jesus crosses the Sea of Galilee to deal with a guy who's possessed by a demon. Then crosses again he's confronted and invited by Jairus to come heal his daughter. I mean, there's always all these passages about the one, but we're trying to be as efficient as we can. And then I feel like a lot of times us pastors forget that we're shepherds. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we want to be leaders before we're shepherds. But the role of the shepherd is to care for God's people. It's in the book of Acts chapter 20, I think it's verse 28, like to continue to care for the flock of God, not to prod them and to lead them, but care for them. It's about proximity with the people and not just get as many people in the room, stick them on a conveyor belt of Christianity we call discipleship, when it's not really making disciples who make disciples. It's just getting Christians together to hang out. And I just don't want to go that route. I've been convicted over the years that I just wanted the crowd. And now it's like God's really worked on me and broken me a lot, especially the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. Man, shepherd his people. And as I shepherd and equip them, they go out. And then I go out as a disciple. It's not like I don't have to do anything. Isn't it weird how we pastors can be really bold behind a pulpit, but often we're very timid when we're out with everybody else? And so I want to be a disciple of Jesus before a pastor of his people. Because I feel like when you do it that way, you're a better shepherd. Mm-hmm. But if you start with shepherd, you're a really bad disciple, then you're actually disobedient. I'm supposed to be a disciple, a pupil, a learner of Jesus. Mm. So I want to see the ministry handed back to the people. And I care for them when they come back. I check in on them constantly and then send them back out. And then know that, hey, I'm doing the same thing you are. Just as terrified in situations. But we have to ask the question, is Jesus worth it? Mm. And if he is, we'll do it. And if he's not, we won't. But I feel like it gets down to that simple. Mm. And when Mary says, just do whatever he says, just do whatever he says. And if it means I just fill jars, or if it means, hey, I got to do the dishes and serve my wife, and or she's going to do the dishes and serve me, or she's going to, hey, I'm going to love my kids. Because I used to think, if I could just make it to that massive conference that I could speak at, then I know I've made it. Mm-hmm. I felt like the Lord put on my heart a few years ago, you know you've made it when you've served me and when you've loved your wife, and when you've loved your kids. It's like, it's so simple rather than, oh man, look at the number of people I got to preach to, as if it's about me anyways. Mm-hmm. So it really comes down to the simplicity of just, man, it's about Jesus. Do the little things.
I know a good book called Simple.
That's right. Maybe it's a great book. I should probably read it.
So what's next for you guys?
For
Ignite.
There's just one person here.
That's right. who are we talking to?
I guess the church, yeah. What's next for you? Let's get more specific. I was thinking about Ignite City Church. No, but what's next for you? And what's God taking? What's he doing with you right now?
I just finished that. And then I've started to think, well, it is kind of easy to put those things out now. So I don't know. I've had a couple ideas of some other things to do with regards to that. But my priority, honestly, and it's not, no one's going to post about this. Mm-hmm. I just really, well, I want to love Jesus with everything. And I want my wife to be loved well. I want to be obedient in how I love her and how I love my family and to care for the people that God entrusts to me and to do it so well that he would actually applaud my efforts, because I remember asked a few pastors, hey, how do you know you're doing it right? How do you know when I was getting ready, like starting to do this, how do you know you're doing it well? Mm-hmm. And I got like 6 or 7 different answers. And some were like, I don't know, I guess I'll find out in heaven. Yeah. But then you have the first 3 chapters of Revelation, especially 2 to 3, and Jesus is saying, hey, I like this about this, what you're doing, but I don't like this one.
Nobody said when the tithe numbers are up.
No, they didn't say attendance.
They didn't say when you get the mansion and the private jet.
They didn't say that. Oh, that's still, I'm still going for that. Maybe that should be my next goal.
When pre-COVID numbers are back to normal.
Yeah, that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
But when you get to Revelation 3, and I think it's the Church of Sardis, and he says, you have the reputation.
We have more diversity in our church.
When he says you have the reputation of being alive, but you're dead.
Sardis.
That's as far away from truth as you could be. Hey, we're doing a great job, and the whole time Jesus is looking at going, you're dead.
It's whitewashed tombs.
It's just horrible.
Yeah.
The other thing is I asked, hey, what's the role of a pastor? And I got 6 or 7 different answers. It's almost like we pastors don't know what our job is.
Right.
It's simply to care for God's people and to equip the saints for works of service.
It's not to grow the church in numbers and finances?
No, no. I used to think that. I don't believe that. I think it's supposed to build the kingdom. I think Mike Breen, I think he wrote a book about discipleship, and he said, if you start with building your church, you won't automatically have disciples. But if you start with building disciples, you'll always have a church. And I like that. Like, you focus on discipleship. Worship gatherings for me are for the saints. Anybody can come in. But it's for those who know Jesus. Our Easter gatherings, they're for followers of Jesus to celebrate Jesus. And anyone can come in and hear the gospel, and I will present the gospel.
Great.
But worship gatherings are for the saints. They're for Jesus lovers. And we are mindful of those who come in. So I guess there's nothing different. I'm seriously just want to be faithful. At the end of the day or the end of the week, God will say, hey, well done. Yeah. You did a good job.
I like that take on life. Incremental, kind of just move forward, be obedient.
Yeah.
You know, I like it. Yeah. It is simple.
It is simple.
So check out Brian's book, Brian Holland Simple. You can find it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That's the only place.
The only place you can get it is on Amazon. So do that.
Yeah.
You know, we usually do 10 questions that we ask every guest. Would you like to do that now?
Sure. Adam,
what do you think?
Let's start it.
Okay. Should we like do something else, like an arm wrestle or something? Or something?
Oh, he's a black belt.
That's right.
Like arm wrestle.
I'm not strong though.
maybe we can both take him.
I don't know. He's got the reach.
Yeah.
He's got the reach on us, like Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Just like boom.
The 10 questions.
Well, we usually ask these 10 questions. They're rapid fire.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Number one, have you ever met Carmen?
No, but I noticed that you all have, or at least the
we have a picture of him.
We have a picture. Yeah. I've met the picture.
I've never met him. Have you?
No, uh-uh. No, I didn't know who he was until I started working here.
Because he was a Lutheran.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of us evangelicals were like going to his concerts, his free concerts.
Yep. And we all did the mime thing of all of his songs. We do these mime.
Oh, the things. Champion mime?
The champion mime.
We called that human video.
Yeah, that was it.
That was back when there was a movement in Christianity called being a mime.
That's like an inside joke. There was this movement called being a mime. That's right, Sam. It was like a lot of Marceau followers. Anyway, are you a Calvinist or an Arminian?
Oh, gosh.
That's number two.
Yeah, I'm not going to land on either edge of that. I feel like the truth is in the middle at a level we'll never understand. So I don't land on... I feel like if you ask me my theological background, I guess...
A Molinist.
Like Reformed charismatic. Like, I still believe in the gifts, but I like the Puritan writings, and I know that it all starts with Jesus.
I believe in the gifts, too.
If the rule was not there that you couldn't add something to the Bible, you're allowed to add one book to the Bible, what would it be?
One book to the Bible?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I think that I would – I think I just read one. I just read one that just really blew my mind. It's called The Prayer Life by Andrew Murray.
Murray. Mm.
Andrew Murray, it blew my mind. And the first chapter says the necessity – you know, it's a lot of talking to pastors and leaders – to confess the sin of prayerlessness. And about a month ago, I sat there at 2:30 in the morning because I couldn't sleep. And I just thought, oh, this book will put me to sleep. I've never read it. It kept me awake for an hour and a half. Mm. And I did. I pray, God, I confess. I pray nice prayers, cordial prayers, but I had to confess the sin of prayerlessness, and it's revolutionized my prayer life. It's unbelievable. Mm. It's so sweet now.
I love Andrew Murray.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's a South African pastor, about turn of the century, 1900, something
like that. And he's not afraid. He doesn't pull punches.
No, he's really good. There's a bunch of books by him. If you get it, check him out as an author.
Absolutely. Yeah,
really good.
I highly recommend him.
All right, so I already know the answer to this, but cigars or pipes?
I don't do either one of them.
Neither.
I don't.
Yeah.
If you could hang out with any three people, living or dead, and you can't pick Jesus, who would it be?
Oh, gosh. Can I already know them, or it's like
yeah, it can be like, oh, I hang out with my friend every week, and I just like to see him.
Kevin, you, it'd be kind of fun to continue.
Sorba. Yeah.
I just met you, so it might be kind of fun to hang out and get to know you a little bit.
Thanks.
But I don't know if you've made the list yet, so.
All right, you gotta think about it. You're blowing a big spot there on me.
So Adam actually is very interesting.
I know, I'm totally played.
Yeah. Unbeknownst to some, he's very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, growing up, I love playing basketball, and so like Michael Jordan was the guy back in the day. Like when basketball was better. Like I really liked it then. And I know I would like to hear his story. I'd like to hear his life story.
Haven't you watched Space Jam? Isn't that
that's a biography?
Isn't that autobiographical?
Autobiography.
Yeah. It's a biography.
I think I'd like to listen to Mother Teresa and watch her heart for the poor.
Mm-hmm. So you, me, Michael Jordan, Mother Teresa, going out to Applebee's.
The three. So I mean, it's kind of all over the place.
Have a talk.
One of my friends met Mother Teresa, and he said she was really mean.
Dude, really? I was hoping you would say that. That's so funny when they're like.
She was like, Alan Tennyson, he met Mother Teresa. He said that she was like the meanest lady.
Well, that just ruined my idea.
I'm sure she wasn't, but he tried to bring her a chair or something.
Yeah.
Like she was like standing there. She's like 90. So he tries to bring a chair over and she's like, what are you doing? Like something like bit his head up. He was like, I'm sorry.
That would be like
I'm sorry, Mother Teresa.
You know you've made it when you've had to apologize here.
Funny. Okay, so I already know the answer to this too. Whiskey or beer?
I have the palate of like a 2-year-old. I don't like any of it. It's not like I'm against it. I just don't like the taste.
If you had to, if you had to force yourself to down one of them,
I wouldn't even know it. I feel like whiskey just feels like you're stronger, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I just don't understand.
I'll take a whiskey.
That's what it sounds like.
What would be the first thing you would do as president?
Oh, gosh. I think... okay. I think I would... You know, they have that big party, the inaugural thing for the president when everyone shows up and it's...
The insurrection riot?
Yeah, no, not that one.
You know, no, January 6th.
Once he's inaugurated, they have
the big everybody party. Climbs the wall of the Capitol and breaks it.
And they let the Buffalo guy in and everybody's... And he prays for everyone?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking that.
The inaugural ball.
Oh, yeah, the inaugural ball.
Yes, yeah.
Inaugural ball.
I don't think I said insurrection, but if I did, I apologize.
No, I said that.
Okay. I think I'd want to get rid of that. And just kind of have the in and out trucks in the backyard, and then I want to fly an Air Force One like that. I just want to go see what that
first
feels like.
Fun first. Stuff.
Yeah, like just it. Go do that, and then you got to get to work. Then you got to do your thing. But
get to work,
I'm also not the greatest at politics, so I'm pretty simple.
You just be a fun, laid back president.
There's a job.
Food
to do.
Trucks and airplane rides.
Everybody.
There's a job to do, but at the beginning.
Each American will get to ride Air Force One one time during my presidency. Let's see if you get elected.
But who would say yes to that?
I would
want to. Every single person.
Oh, yeah. I would do that.
Yep. That's so maybe good. I'm onto something.
I think maybe you are. I'd vote for you. Okay, so have you ever punched anybody or been punched? Do you have a good story?
Well, I did karate, so I get punched for that. But I remember my brother and I, we kind of got into it one day. I don't know who.
Have you ever peed your pants in public? Is the other?
I've never peed my pants in public. Was that the next question? Because that's not part of this one.
Part. It's got to tell us about punching his brother, who's a cop.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but assaulting a cop.
I just interrupted.
This was before the. You didn't let me have my glory on this one.
Yeah.
This is before he was a cop. We were young, and we were both taking karate at the time, and we were on the side of the house, and I don't know. We just got it. I mean, we're brothers. And all of a sudden, he took a swing, and I blocked it. I couldn't believe it. I blocked it. I nailed him right in the ribs. And it, like, you heard the air go out of him, just kind of gasped, like, and then he couldn't breathe. And then he said something like, I'm gonna kill you. And then I ran to the park for 2 or 3 hours until my parents got home. And then I came back, because he really could destroy me. But at least in that moment, I nailed him. Mm-hmm. I dropped him. It felt pretty good. Yeah,
lucky punch.
It was solid. I'm not gonna say lucky. No. Don't take solid. My glory. Like this, I nailed skill. That one. It was skill.
It was your taekwondo. Yeah, coming out.
It was. I nailed it.
It was innate ability.
I don't know what happened. I was just my body's.
It's just part of it.
My body's a weapon.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So that's the one time, or a time. Yeah.
That's cool.
You could go see one concert, any band in history. Who do you see?
Oh gosh, any band in history. I don't know. I mean. I kind of like Journey. I'm a Journey guy. I'm not sure about
you.
Concert,
wasted your any person in history on me, and your any band in history.
Yeah,
on Journey.
Well, I don't watch a lot of. I don't listen to a lot of music. Like I know that I feel what like I'm the worst one. Like when people say, "Hey, what's your favorite? Right? What's your favorite movie?" I don't know. I don't. Yeah. I get that pop culture stuff. I'm just not. Yeah. I'm not up to speed on all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Don't know.
I don't do a lot of concerts anyway.
DC Talk.
They were good back in the day. Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah. Right.
It's good
from the very beginning, I was all into them. Yeah.
You were down with the DC talk. Down with the DC talk. I don't want it. I was singing that with Alyssa Childers like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah, we were singing that song together. She was on Zoom.
Oh, look at that.
And it was a very strange moment.
Well, of course
moment.
She went from Zoe Girls, so she's good to go, right?
I know, dude. Man. She's rad. Okay, this is our last question. We ask this of everybody.
Okay.
And it's our last question of the interview, but... Okay. Do you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior?
You know what? I think so. I think I'm there. I think I'm ready.
Are you there?
I think I've You'll made it to that
solid.
Point.
Do us a solid.
Do us a solid.
We got him.
Would you finally do that so you can lead your people well?
That's right. Finally receive Christ. Well, thank you, Brian Holland, for coming to this to the Babylon Bee.
It's been, thanks for being here.
It was an honor.
And make sure you check out his book.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Check out his book, Simple.
Yep.
Simple.
Oh, that was great. Hey, I love that guy. I really enjoyed that.
I love that guy.
We still don't know if you were on the interview.
I think I did great on that interview.
You used to be good.
Adam Ford.
I really miss Adam Ford.
Here's the hate mail on our recent Michael Malice podcast. More kosher controlled op podcasts? No thanks.
We get a few of the anti-Semitic comments every now and then. The Jewish conspiracy theorist
and
people.
His name is Trans Smart, and his picture is Karine Jean-Pierre with a clown wig and nose.
I couldn't tell who that
was.
Oh,
that's interesting. It just looks like a clown.
Yeah.
Good eye on that.
Here's a reply to our newsletter, and someone responded.
Flowerbed.
Few, I unsubscribe to your religious bull...
Sideburns.
...emails. If these emails continue... I'll stick a pack of baby-eating Democrats on your
head. Ocean water.
I'll stick a pack of baby-eating
Democrats. Sincerely, Matt Russell.
No, it's thanks.
Thanks.
Matt Russell.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Some kind words.
You're welcome.
But then what we edited is he went on to say, then I realized I shouldn't think that way about other people because someone out there loves them.
Oh, and yeah, maybe, see?
Yeah.
We're deceptively editing the email.
Dan's deceptively editing.
Thanks for joining us on the Babylon Bee podcast this week, everybody. Become a paying subscriber at babylonbee.com/plans using code podcast, and you can join us for the rest of the episode.
Take it away, Charlie Kirk Slider.
I live like a capitalist every single day, Chank. I live like a capitalist every single day, Chank.
live like a capitalist every single day, Chank.
Coming up next for Babylon Bee subscribers.
It was like one of the first games.
Complicated board games.
It was one.
Like, that's too complicated. It's, I like don't break the ice, ants in the pants.
Yeah.
Gibbs of fiddly wings.
Gibbs of strategy.
Crossfire.
Crossfire. Oh,
you'll get caught up in the crossfire.
And then at the end he goes, you like?
I don't care if you like.
Checkmate. Atheist will say it's fake.
This has been another edition of the Babylon Bee Podcast. From the dedicated team of certified fake news journalists you can trust here at the Babylon Bee, reminding you to take the white pill. Jesus has already defeated death for us.